Who hasn't heard of something called the Mark of the Beast? It's all around us. People are talking about it. They're writing little folders and brochures and booklets about it. They're writing books about it. They're being interviewed on television about it. In our society today, because of a growth toward a cashless society and because of very deep concerns over microchips and computers and all of that, there are an awful lot of people who actually believe that we're about to enter a state of a sort of a Big Brother society where some governments, either a super government, the United Nations, other nefarious groups within groups or governments within governments, certain government agencies, the government itself, are going to keep watch on us and keep tabs on us and keep track of us and know everything about us. And people are very, very paranoid over absolute annihilation of any personal sovereignty, of any personal right to privacy, of the privacy to do your own business and conduct your own affairs and make your own decisions. Who hasn't heard about the mysterious Mark of the Beast? That's what I want to talk to you about in this program, and I want to tell you about a book that I have for you, What is the Mark of the Beast, which deliberately goes through some of the misconceptions and shows the hand with the big kind of a mallet that used to appear on one of the nation's detective stories that showed a Mark 7 production or whatever, as if it could be hammered onto your forehead. What is this number, 666? Some people think they find it on credit cards or baggage checks or maybe even the cellophane wrappers around a package of bread. And they wonder what in the world it is and could it ever be imposed upon them. People fear it because they suspect that if this mark were imposed upon them, a poor helpless little lady in maybe a shut-in condition with arthritis on Social Security, what is she going to do if some couple of big thugs come in there and implant a microchip underneath the skin of her forehead? She's very concerned about it. Also a sermon tape on the image of the beast. I'll talk about these biblical metaphors and symbols in just a moment, because we're going to go through several of the scriptures in Revelation 13 and Revelation 15, and we'll try to make it clear from the real overview of the Bible. But in the meantime, you can get the telephones ringing right now and get this brochure, this booklet, on What is the Mark of the Beast and the Image of the Beast full-length sermon tape by dialing 903-825-2525. It's free of charge. There's no price. 903-825-2525. Now, obviously, before you find out what is the mark of the beast, you've got to find out what in the world is the beast, and what is all of this, and what is it talking about? The Bible uses metaphor. It uses simile. It uses analogy. It uses parables. It uses representations to illustrate a point. Back in the second chapter of the book of Daniel, there was a great image seen by the ancient king of, well, he was a young man at the time, probably about 17, truth be told, but we think of it as ancient because it was ancient Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, who saw a great idol in a plain, and he was very puzzled by it. And Daniel, who was a prophet of God, was able to tell him exactly what that meant. Now, the parts of that great image, that great idol in the plain, were gold, silver, brass, iron, mixed with miry clay. And the Bible itself tells you exactly what it portrayed. Daniel told that king of Babylon that the head of gold was stood for him. King and kingdom were synonymous. He then went right through history, and this was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years before any of it happened. And there are just too many biblical commentaries and too many biblical archaeology and history books and too many Bible handbooks and too many theologians in too many theological seminaries who know the truth about when Daniel prophesied, about all the things that he foretold, and the fact that just exactly like a series of dominoes falling one after another, here came these four great successive world-ruling empires of ancient Babylon, and then Persia, and then Greco-Macedonia under Alexander the Great, and finally the great pagan Roman Empire that the Bible predicted would fall and rise and fall and rise, would have many different resurrections down through the ages until, believe it or not, there would be an end time resurrection of the same system. Now, it's not talking about a lot of Carthaginian illiterates running around in short skirts and brandishing Roman short swords. It's talking about a modern-day coalition of governments that are going to be put together in the heartland of Europe, which was that place which was always occupied and under the sway of the Roman Empire, especially the Holy Roman Empire, after the days of Justinian, Charlemagne, the days of Frederick the Great, the days of Bismarck, well, the Habsburgs, Otto the Great, the days even of Napoleon and coming down to Adolf Hitler and Benito Mussolini and coming down into the time in which we live today. Now, I'm going to break into the middle of the 13th chapter of the book of Revelation, read a few scriptures for you, and let's just see if we apply biblical savvy and knowledge and sense and apply the biblical metaphors and the biblical symbolism to what this is saying, whether or not we can understand. Verse 11 of Revelation 13. I beheld another beast. Now, the first beast in Revelation 13 has all of the most powerful parts of that great idol statue I told you about, you read of in Daniel 2, and of the great beasts, of which you see four of them in the seventh chapter of Daniel. So the most powerful parts of those four beasts are revealed in the first few verses, the first 10 verses of Revelation 13, and it is the ancient pagan Roman Empire, later called the Holy Roman Empire. Now, coming into the part that talks about the mark of the beast, the image of the beast, and the number of his name, we come to verse 11. I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth. Now, the beast is a symbol in the Bible of a pagan Gentile nation. When Nebuchadnezzar went insane and was rooting around in his own backyard for 7 years when he was as crazy as a loon, and Daniel was virtually running the government at that time, Nebuchadnezzar, it said, the hair of his body and his hair grew very long, his fingernails grew out like claws. He was utterly out of his mind. Biblical scholars, historians, eschatologists, archaeologists know that that was a symbol of the fact that many Gentile world rulers, kings, emperors, dictators have had the minds of wild, ravening beasts. How many do you have to cite? Attila the Hun? I mean, what about Adolf Hitler and Benito Mussolini? What about Stalin? What about all of the men who went before them? Alexander the Great himself? What about Diocletian and Vespasian and Nero? What about some of the people today like Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi? What about some of the people who are alive today like Vladimir Zhirinovsky and the things that he states and the shocking results of recent polls in Russia that indicate that the super ultra nationalists are making victories along with some of the old hardline communists? What I'm trying to get across to you in this program is that biblical typology and biblical symbolism is not just for the curious. It's not something to pique our imagination and get us running around thinking the sky is falling, or let's go run and hide, or let's go dig a hole in the earth and raise buffalo, or let's be survivalists, or let's be suspicious of the federal government or the FBI or the DEA or the BATF or the IRS or somebody else. Recently somebody again tried to bomb a government building out in Reno, and thankfully the bomb didn't go off. And I don't even remotely want to appeal to people with any kind of an agenda like that. I want to get across the truth of the Bible, the Word of God, to people, and not make people paranoid or make them all suspicious or fearful of government or government agencies. So let's take a look at what the Bible says and painstakingly try to understand it as we look at biblical metaphor. I beheld another beast. A beast is a symbol of a pagan Gentile government that is ruled over by a man with a mind like a wild animal, a man who is bereft of compassion, bereft of the normal human feelings of love, of sympathy, of empathy, of compassion. And look at the likes of Hitler and Stalin in history for an example. So the biblical term beast doesn't mean, as oftentimes cartoonists and artists like to depict all these funny-looking monsters on the religious paraphernalia they put out. It is a symbol that stands for something. So when he said, I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, it really means I beheld another Gentile government arising from among the masses of the population. And he had two horns like a lamb. Now, a little baby male lamb is one of the most gentle, innocent, non-threatening little creatures you can imagine. What does that always symbolize in the Bible? If you were to take an exhaustive concordance, look up every place where you can find lamb, you would find the Passover lamb and the innocent little unblemished Passover lamb everybody knows was a symbol of Jesus Christ. You would see John the Baptist at the baptism of Jesus say, "Behold, the Lamb of God." You would see the lamb pictured in the book of Revelation, whose blood was shed from the foundation of the earth. And you would know that if it has two horns like a lamb, that it's characterized something that looks like Christ. Is it Christ? Ah, but wait. And he spake as a dragon. Now again, the dragon is very clearly explained in Revelation 12:3 and Revelation 12:9. And the dragon, the great serpentine form with the bat-like wings and breathing fire of mythology, is a picture of Satan the devil in the Bible. So here is, on the one hand, a pagan Gentile government of some kind that comes out of the masses of populations. It appears on the surface, it masquerades like, it is a counterfeit of, it looks like something that is Christ-like. But aha, when it speaks, its doctrine, its propaganda are of Satan the devil. So that's what he's telling us he sees. Now, the very first of the four horsemen of the apocalypse in Revelation the 6th chapter is exactly what Jesus said as the first part of his warning of what we would see in a step-by-step sequence of events unfolding in geopolitical affairs down toward the second coming of Christ, the intervention of God, the time of the end, the time when many of these biblical prophecies are going to be fulfilled. And what was that? The very first warning of Christ, it was a warning that you will see false Christ and false prophets. There will be a tremendous explosion of false religion. The people will be confused. There will be hundreds to choose from. There will be all the great religions of the world. How many hundreds of them are there? How many dozens of splits and schisms and divisions are there within those? And how many people are bailing out of churches and starting other little groups all the time? It seems to be something in the water or something in the air. It is a time today of great religious confusion, and that's exactly what Jesus said it would be. Now, he, the next verse, this satanic image of the beast who masquerades as Christ, quote, exercises all the power of the first beast before him. Now, the first beast before him is the ancient Roman civil government. Eventually, it was called the Holy Roman Empire. And this great organization, which looks Christ-like, but which speaks as if Satan was feeding it its doctrines and ideas, is therefore obviously a counterfeit religious system exactly as Jesus predicted. There is going to be, there has been, there shall be in the future, such a system who is literally going to exercise the powers of the state. Now, when I come back, I'll explain further. We will wade through some of these verses painstakingly and slowly, but I want you to take time out and take a look at this and be sure to get a pen or a pencil and jot down the mailing address, better yet, the telephone number, and start the phones ringing for this free information. I'll be right back. What is the mysterious mark of the beast described in the book of Revelation? Some believe it will be forced upon society by a cashless economy, and the credit cards and computer transactions represent a progression toward that end. Is the new generation of magnetic strip driver's licenses the next step toward government-issued smart cards? Some speculate that we already carry symbolic representations of the mark of the beast in our wallets, finding relevance in the odd depictions and numeric symbolism printed on paper currency. Parents are alarmed to learn that the United States government demands that even their very young children be issued lifelong identification numbers in the form of Social Security registration. The latest target for speculation is the increasingly widespread use of a microchip implant for pets, which can be scanned for identification numbers, providing the key to a data bank of personal pet information. Many worry this method could easily be adapted for use in humans. Can the mark of the beast be forced upon innocent individuals without their knowledge or consent? Call right now for a free copy of the booklet, What is the Mark of the Beast? And the sermon tape entitled, Image of the Beast by Garner's Head on Strong.
vote will be sent to you free if you call 903-825-2525.
Where would you go to find, anywhere in the world today, nations which are virtually church and state at the same time? A state which is a church, or a church which is a state? I'm just submitting that to you as a question. In the United States, of course, we revere the idea of the separation of church and state. And there are some myths about that, about how it all got started, and certainly the state religions of the original colonies were rather intolerant of others, and each individual group that came over here wanted freedom for itself, but not necessarily freedom for all the others. It took quite a while thrashing around and sorting that out, and a lot of bloodshed and a lot of problems like burning witches in Salem, Massachusetts, before the United States truly became a nation of many different religions with a certain degree of tolerance. But it isn't that way in many other countries of the world, is it? It isn't that way among some of the tribalism and the group instinct, which is sometimes nationalism, ethnicity, sometimes religious and taboos and various animistic religions in Africa, like in Rwanda. I can't tell the difference between an Igbo and a Hausa, but they hate one another. I can't tell the difference between Zoshas and Matabele, but oftentimes they hate one another. People who look alike to you and to me in certain other areas of the world hate one another. Now, during World War II, Japan is a case in point, and so is Germany. The Emperor of Japan was supposed to have descended straight from the sun, and he was revered and literally worshipped. People worshipped him, and many thousands, countless thousands, I suppose, Japanese soldiers fearfully committed suicide, dove off cliffs, crashed their kamikaze aircraft into American ships, dying for the Emperor in the very same way that a member of the Hezbollah will strap some Semtex around him, climb on a bus, and kill Israeli citizens and blow himself into a pink mist at the same time. This kind of incredible, extreme religious fanaticism is foreign to the American psyche. We have a hard time understanding it. Look at Adolf Hitler and World War II, where a man was able to so mesmerize the German population and so articulate their frustrations that he was able to actually vicariously shape and to mold those hearts and minds of those millions of people so that their collective frustrations, anxieties, their bitterness, their hatred over their economic plight between the two world wars could be directed toward Jews and toward the United States and toward Great Britain and the other powers, especially France, that had imposed upon them the Treaty of Versailles. It became state worship. The famous rallies at Nuremberg, the torchlight parades, the great symbolism. And what was the symbolism all about? You see, even if you're a group of neighborhood kids and you want to get together and form a club, you want to be the member of a gang, the Crips, the Bloods, and all the others, you got to wear a color. You got to have a ring. You need an insignia. You need a flag. You need a banner, a sign, an identifying mark, a symbol, a label, a name. So our sports teams are tigers and lions and bears, and they're all kinds of ferocious animals, aren't they? You don't see any skunks and possums running around the NFL, the ABA, or some of the other sports organizations. But you do see all these predatory animals. And what are the symbols of nations? Eagles, lions, unicorns, oftentimes animals and beasts. All right, now back to the scriptures. Let me get back to that and show you. It says he, that is this lamb-like, masquerading as Christ, but satanic, speaking power, exercises all the power of the first beast before him, and causes the earth and them that dwell therein to worship the first beast. Worship, in other words, this pagan conglomeration of 10 nations together as a great supranational power that is revealed in the first few verses of the 13th chapter of Revelation. It is so powerful. Its economy is so strong, its military is so huge and so technologically superior, it has such tremendous resources and reserves, it is such a gargantuan economic power that people revere it, they adore it, they worship it. Now this is supranational patriotism. This is patriotism to such an extreme that we've only seen it a very few times in history. Some of the cheering throngs in Rome when one of the great legions would come marching through the victory gates and the parades and the celebration is something that you might have seen in historical movies.
But certainly during World War II, in the days of Adolf Hitler, we saw state worship. We see the same thing, the same kind of incredible fanaticism when we remember the crowd screaming outside the U.S. Embassy during the Iranian hostage crisis. We see the same thing of the dupes and the people out there screaming and cheering and yelling for Saddam Hussein. We're not really familiar with that. When Americans scream and yell and shake their fists, it's usually in front of the White House or in front of the Capitol against the government. It's not the other way around. We don't see great rallies over there of people absolutely just pouring out their hearts, yay, the United States. It's a completely different concept. That's why we're dealing here with Gentile nations, and it says they cause that people will worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. Now, Rome fell in 476. That was the deadly wound. It was healed in 554 by Belisarius. That was the healing of it. And eventually it became the Holy Roman Empire. Verse 13, he doeth great wonders, so that he, that's again this image of the beast, looks like Christ but speaks like the devil, maketh fire to come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. Compare that with 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter. A man of sin is going to sit in the temple of God saying that he is God and will have the power to perform such stupendous, astounding miracles that people will think this is God. They're going to say that is God, and they're going to worship him because they're going to say only God could do that. The Bible predicts it, and it predicts it for the days, the years ahead of us in our time. And deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast. Now the image is a replica, and I'll come back in a moment and explain exactly what that means, because it's then the image of the beast that produces the mark of the beast, the number of his name, and all of that that we're coming to toward the end of this chapter. I'll be right back. What is the mysterious mark of the beast described in the book of Revelation? Some believe it will be forced upon society by a cashless economy, and that credit cards and computer transactions represent a progression toward that end. Use the new generation of magnetic strip driver's licenses, the next step toward government-issued smart cards. Some speculate that we already carry symbolic representations of the mark of the beast in our wallets, finding relevance in the odd depictions and numeric symbolism printed on paper currency. Parents are alarmed to learn that the United States government demands that even their very young children be issued lifelong identification numbers in the form of Social Security registration. The latest target for speculation is the increasingly widespread use of a microchip implant for pets, which can be scanned for identification numbers, providing the key to a data bank of personal pet information. Many worry this method could easily be adapted for use in humans. Can the mark of the beast be forced upon innocent individuals without their knowledge or consent? Call right now for a free copy of the booklet, What is the Mark of the Beast? And the sermon tape entitled, Image of the Beast by Garner Ted Armstrong. Both will be sent to you free if you call 903-825-2525. You will find out what is the image of the beast, that is a shadowy type, a representation, a simile of the beast, when you get that tape that you just saw. I want you to hear that sermon. It's really revealing. Now it says here, saying to them that dwell on the earth, they should make an image to the beast. In other words, a replica of a pagan, false, Gentile government under a man who is a despot, a dictator with the mind of a ravenous beast, which had the wound by the sword and did live. I told you about that. And he had the power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast. Now, first they worship the beast, which is state worship. Now along comes a replica, which is an ecclesiastical system that is formed like a civil government. And it causes worship, and it says, as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. Do you know of any time in history where some great religious organization has actually used the power of the state, where armed guards with lances and spears and pikes and with swords would come in and literally torture and put people to death if they refused to worship some great state ordained religious organization? Do you know of anything like that in history? Well, I don't want to give away any secrets. I could, but I don't want to get myself killed either. I'm just telling you that you can look in history, and there are plenty of books available that will take you through some of these scriptures and some of those in the Old Testament, especially in the book of Daniel, and tell you exactly what that was. There have been times in history where people have been murdered because they would not bow down to a particular state religion. And that's what the Bible is telling you right here. Now we come to the critical scriptures. He causes all, that is this image of the beast, this lamb-like, Christ-like, yet satanic organization, both small and great, listen to that, rich and poor, oh, then multimillionaires as well as poor little old shut-in ladies with arthritis, right? Rich and poor, free and bond, now that was back here in the days when slavery was still in vogue, to receive a mark in their right hand. Now the right hand is a symbol of agreement. It's a symbol of a vow. It's a symbol of a covenant. It's a symbol of work. It's a symbol of acceptance. In their right hand or in their forehead. And the forehead, the frontal lobes of your brain, is where your decision-making ability lies. It's where your conscience is. It's where your thought processes are. It has nothing to do with your physical ability or your memory. It is where your decision-making process, what we call our psyche, and where the spirit, the human spirit, dwells. So it means acceptance. It means complete agreement. It means giving your mind over into this system. That no man might buy or sell. Now here's where people think it has to do with credit cards and implants. Say he had the mark or the name of the beast. Oh, wait just a minute. What? Read it in your own Bible, verse 17. Not just the mark or the name of the beast, or the number of his name, any one of the three. Here is wisdom, let him have understanding, count the number of the beast, it's the number of a man, and his number is 666. Seven is perfection, three is finality, six is the number of man, three sixes is ultimate, final, total, carnality, and the number of man. And you will learn about it when you get both the booklet and the full-length sermon tape entitled The Image of the Beast and the booklet, What is the Mark of the Beast? It's not what you think it is. In the 15th chapter of Revelation, you read of those who are standing on a sea of glass that is a symbol of salvation, standing before the throne of Christ, and they have gotten the victory over the beast, over the mark of the beast, the image of the beast, the number of his name, and it's all the saints. It's not talking about some small little group somewhere in Papua New Guinea or down in the Okadongo swamp. It's talking about all the saints. But when was the last time you were consciously aware of the fact that you were struggling in your daily life against something called the beast or the mark of the beast? Get informed. Get both the booklet and the sermon tape. Absolutely free of charge, no price, if you dial 903-825-2525. That's 903-825-2525. Free of charge, no price, and I'll see you right here, same time, same channel, in 1 week. For literature and tapes offered, write to Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 2525, Tyler, Texas 75710, or call 903-825-2525.